Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut, and pouches that gives you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz that you're used to without tobacco. Fully Loaded Chew comes in 9 flavors and is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine there is. To give us a try, head on over to fullyloadedchew.com for a $1 can of chew with free shipping when you enter the code OUTDOOR1. OUTDOOR and the number 1. Lastly, many outdoorsmen are trying to quit tobacco altogether, and Fully Loaded Chew may be that first step. For more information on our product line, visit fullyloadedchew.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and we're going outside of what we've been doing for a while, and we're going to have a BS session with my buddy Chad Riker from the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. And today we are going to be talking about underrated, overrated. Let's see, it was the Ohio Huntsman Podcast did a version of this, so shout out to them because I'm ripping off this idea straight from them. They're on the network as well. Give them a listen. But so what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about Western hunting gear and equipment. And we just kind of shoot from the hip. We talk about whether or not camo is underrated or overrated. We talk about optics. We talk about boots and socks. We talk about packs, sleeping bags, a variety of different Western backcountry themed, products. And I'm going to do the same thing, I think, next week with an episode, and we're going to do it about whitetails as well. So this is just one of those shoot from the hip type podcasts, and yeah, we go from there. So I got to do some commercials real quick, and then I'm just going to say screw it and get right into it. Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands, dude, you got to check them out. If you are, it is a commitment to get mobile, right? It is a big jump to learn how to get off field edges and go right into the timber, be mobile, hunt a different location every single night. But as we all know, first time in, best time in, and Lone Wolf Tree Stands allow me to do that. Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands allow me to do that. So my favorite setup is the Assault with two sticks. The Assault with 4 sticks, and that allows me to get in any tree. And the best part about a Lone Wolf is you don't need it to be in it can be a crooked tree, it can be a tree with a lot of branches, but you can still get those sticks and that stand to level out and get you up quietly and get you in the right position. Not close to the right position, but get you in the right position. So if you want to find out more, visit the Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stand website, and checkout, enter the discount code 9FC21, and that's going to save you $50 off of all purchases over $200. So that right there is a 25% discount, but I think with their products, you're looking at between 25 to 18% discount depending on the purchase, and that's a big discount. The average conservationist is an apparel line. They're a lifestyle brand, but they have some kick-ass logos, logo tees. They have some really cool hoodies, hats. I'm a huge fan of their general hat. I feel like a general when I wear it. Tons of cool artwork on their t-shirts and stuff. But here's the kicker. The best part about this brand is that right off the top, they take 10% off and they give it to, like, 10% comes out of their revenue and it goes to a conservation organization. So that's why I'm partnered with these guys. They're doing great things in the space, and they're leading by example, right? They are sending 10% of their income to a local or national level conservation efforts, and that's a win, man. So anything helps, and these guys are doing big things and leading the way. The owner, Marcus Ewing, also has a podcast here on the Sportsman's Nation Network. It is the Average Conservationist podcast, and they do that in connection with 2% for Conservation, which is the Sportsman's Nation itself is a 2% for certified company. So there's that. And the last one is Hunt Stand. Now, Hunt Stand is a product that I've been playing around with this year, and it's awesome, man. It is one of those, it's a digital mapping app. You can download it for free, and then you can get their elite package, which is like $30 a month or something like that. $30 overall. It's an excellent option as far as digital mapping is concerned. It allows you to select, I think there's like six or more base maps that you can choose from, you know, and you can do everything. You can mark, like, track your hike in. You can mark where you find, you know, where you put your tree stands and trail cameras. You can find square yardage. You can, you know, measure yardage. You can find property owner information. So really, everything that you need from a digital mapping aspect, Hunt Stand has got it. And I think it's one of the number one most downloaded digital mapping apps for the hunter. So take that into consideration as well. You can find more information about that product on huntstand.com. Please go out and support those companies that support this podcast, because then it's like, it's that cycle, right? They pay me, I promote their products, and I give you guys a ton of free content. So please go out and support those brands. Lastly, we have the episode. We're just going to go right into it. Hopefully you guys have a good day, and I guess we'll catch you on the backside. All right, on the phone with me right now, Mr. Chad Riker of the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. Chad, how are we doing?
Hi, I'm doing great, Dan. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And this literally all came together, 5 minutes ago, where I'm like, hey, man, I had a guy bail on me. Can you hop in? And you're like, yeah, let's do it. And I don't even...
Sure, let's do it.
I don't even think you kind of know what the premise of this podcast is today. So I'm going to lay it out here right now. And we're going to keep it in the realm of Western hunting. So whether that's mule deer, elk, antelope, backcountry hunting, maybe hunts from the truck, whatever. We both have enough experience, I feel, to talk on some of these matters. And the whole premise here is we're going to talk about a specific product, and then we're going to talk, or a product category, and then we're going to say, is it overrated, is it underrated, or is it accurately rated? And I'm just excited to see where this goes, because this is a last minute thing. I had a guy bail on me, so here we are.
Here we are. Let's see where it goes. That's the fun part about podcasts, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Who needs a script?
I've never used one, and that's probably hurt me in the past, but today.
There's podcasts are too fluid. You just got to let them go where they go.
And that's what this is going to, you know, so let's open the dam, and before we get into specific products, give me a very quick rundown of how you choose the products that you actually buy.
Yeah. So I'll tell you very quickly. I try to read a lot of reviews. I have another friend of mine that runs a website and a gear review site that's called Backwoods Pursuit. And that guy tests and reviews gear, tons and tons of gear. Like, he just got done with a spotting scope review that they had like 30 spotting scopes lined up and did an extensive review on those. I try to look for unbiased reviews where you can go and find good quality information, whether it be YouTube, written articles, Go Hunt, Eastman's, that kind of stuff, yeah. Western Hunter. I look for those, and I like to read and compare multiple and not take one person's recommendation, because oftentimes they're very biased or sponsor driven, you know, partner driven, yeah, paid advertisement. So you got to be kind of careful. And then use. Just get a piece of gear out, and if it doesn't work, get rid of it and get something new and try it out and you know, find what works.
Right. All right. Yeah. I'm you know, somewhat the same way. In a way, it's a review. I get a lot of my information from people who have already used the products, right? So like buddies, right? I don't do a lot of online research. If I'm looking for a particular product in a particular category, I'll talk to one of my buddies or I'll talk to someone who has a lot of experience in that realm. I do look at reviews a little bit, and then obviously budget is a big cost of the actual product is a big determining factor as well. So on the long story short side of it, that's how I base my decisions on. Now, throughout the Western hunts, I've been through my Western hunts. You've been through your Western hunts, both elk and a mule deer. So that's what I have experience in. I've been on a couple mule deer hunts where I also had an antelope tag. So I don't have a ton of experience with antelope, but when it comes to gear for, let's just say, backcountry hunts or mule deer or elk, I don't know. I've been through enough of them to know what I like and know what I dislike. So.
And, you know, I think most people start out with mule deer or elk, and they develop their gear or their kit or whatever you want to call it. And then usually that'll progress into something a little bit. Maybe it's pronghorn or something, you know. Yeah. But I think when guys are going west, they're going to start with elk or deer, one of the two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. So I'm just going to kick it off right out of the gate with a big category. And I know that hunting gear, let's just say clothing and apparel and camo, they're the same, but they're almost two different things. So I'm going to just kick this off to you, Chad, with camouflage. Underrated, overrated, accurately rated?
Overrated.
Whew, I like it. I like it. Explain.
Yeah. Okay. So I think you can go back to my grandpa killed elk wearing blue jeans and flannel shirt. Right.
Right.
I 100% can you still do that today? Absolutely. You can. I think what's going on now, though, is a lot of these camouflage companies are producing their great products, but they're charging more and they're just increasing their marketing on those products. When if you bought a solid color of a pant or a shirt or a base layer or a puffy jacket, and it's not a hunting brand, but it's a solid color, you're going to get it for half of the cost of what the camouflage is.
Yeah.
And I say that that's cost related. Do you need it in the field? Do you need to be camouflaged for elk? No, not really. For deer? Maybe. Turkeys? Yeah, it's probably going to be something you want to use.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it depends on the game that you're hunting as well. When you say, is it overrated, underrated? But ultimately, I think it's overrated.
Yeah.
I think you can get it done wearing solid colors, maybe vary your colors a little bit, but that I think you can get it done.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you and say that camouflage is overrated. And I think a lot of companies these days, it's almost like you're part of a club. Right. It's more of a marketing tool to say,
club or a cult.
Yeah.
A
cult.
yeah,
right.
There you go. Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I have to wear, you know, if I want to be part of this club, I have to wear this camo. And this past year, let's see, was it on my elk hunts, I used to be decked out, right? I was decked out even in the tree stand with whitetails, I was decked out, in camo. And I feel like I had the same amount of encounters, the same experiences wearing solid colors than I did with, having a particular camel pattern on me.
Sure.
And I think it all comes down to, you know, hunting strategy at that point, right? If you are downwind of the animal, if you are slow and don't, you know, don't make any erratic movements. And if you don't skyline yourself, and that's just a mule deer, you know, like if you, I don't care what you're wearing. If you're skylining yourself and you're showing movement, they're out, they're leaving. Right.
Right. And the wind is huge.
Yeah. And wind is
huge. You said it earlier. Wind is huge. You got to be in the right spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just one of those things where I almost feel like I am and the more you learn about whitetails and how mule deer and elk see, the more I just feel like, man, camo just, it's, if you're paying extra for a particular brand or a specific pattern, it's just not, I don't know. I just feel like it's overrated in that aspect. It's overrated in the actual functionality of it. And if a savvy shopper does their research, talks to the right people, they can go online and find products that do the exact same thing in a solid color than if it has a, you know, a big brand name behind it.
Right. Yep. I agree 100%.
Yeah. All right. So we both agree that camo is overrated. The next one I think we're probably going to agree on as well, but boots. Now I want to ask you how we should do this. Should we do it boots and socks as two individual categories, or should we put boots and socks together?
I think they're both underrated, so we could probably put them together.
Yeah. And I'm going to say they're underrated as well. So let's explain yourself.
Even if you separated them, I still think they're underrated. Right. So, you know, and put them together and they're probably even more underrated. Yeah. And I say that because I've got a few different pairs of boots, and I have several different kinds of socks, and not every sock matches up with every boot, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Just the way the seam maybe comes across the toe in one pair of boots, it'll give me a blister on a toe, but in another pair of boots, it fits perfectly and it's great.
Yeah.
I think boots are often underrated. I mean, you got to think if you're really hiking and you're really hunting out west and you're side hilling and you're climbing and you're on rocks and then you're on soft dirt and then mud and rain for 10 hours a day, sometimes more than that, if it's depending on the season.
Yeah.
And that is your tires on your car. You know, if you got to have, like, to me, boots are super important. And I've gone through several brands, several types, trying to find the one pair of boot that is the one that makes me feel confident and comfortable. So
yeah,
I think they're highly underrated. It drives me nuts when I see people ask the question, and you see it 10 times a day on Facebook or whatever, hey, what pair of boots should I buy? And there is no answer to that. You have to go try them.
Yeah.
Try them on, wear them, find the one that fits, because every foot is different and every boot is different. Literally the same model of boot from the same brand might be different because of the way it was hand sewn.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could fit different, even the same size, brand, model.
Yeah. And I know there's certain hunts out there where, for example, like glassing. If you're going to do a lot of glassing, you may want an insulated boot, right? But for me, I was out in South Dakota this year, and the high on most days was 14 or like 12 or 14 degrees. No lie, it was extremely cold. So I'd get out there, I'd go glass. But my feet were close to the ground, not like in a whitetail tree stand where you have all this air circulating around it. You're still moving a little bit. And what I've found was that a good boot is very important, right? I'm also saying that a good boot is underrated, but I think if we're going to put it into an equation, the sock is almost it. I think it's weighted heavier. Because for me, I use Crispies, and I can use my Crispies in multiple environments in multiple temperatures, but I can't use the same sock in multiple environments and multiple temperatures. Because if I go too light, my toes get cold. And if I go too heavy in certain scenarios, my feet get hot and then I get uncomfortable. So, and that shifts both ways for temperature. So I think the sock needs to be more customizable to the environment, but a boot you can hunt multiple environments in, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And I agree with you on that too. I've got in early September elk hunting, I have some, they're darn tough socks.
Oh yeah.
They're super thin and they're merino wool. They're actually made for snowboarders and skiers to wear underneath their boots. But they, for me, they work great with the boots that I have. I wear Salewa boots, and they work awesome with those boots. But I have just enough room in those boots where when it becomes like late October and it's starting to get colder, I can put a thicker sock on, and it's still, you know, it does the job that it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So,
and
yep, I think both are underrated. Yeah.
Yeah. I won't even put anything but merino on my feet anymore. It's just,
yeah, definitely no cotton. Whatever you do, just no cotton, on your feet. Yeah. Unless you're going, you know, that's funny, because that's a thing that I hear all the time. Cotton kills and all this other crazy stuff. Okay. I get that. I get that marketing scheme too. But if you're just going out for an afternoon, cotton's not going to kill you. You know, a cotton t-shirt isn't going to kill you. A cotton, whatever. If you're planning on 7 days and some of those days might be in a tent, and you know your feet are going to be in bad shape, then definitely you want to go with something different. But if it's just a day, then you can get away with some cotton. Yeah. So,
and I was approaching it probably just like you were, from the multiple days out, multiple day, like whether it's a 2-night camp or a hunting out of, like if you're hunting out of your truck, it might be a little bit different. It depends on the time you're going to be in the field. A pair of, I guess, a good pair of cotton socks would probably last you, you know, for like a 4-hour hunt from the truck, evening hunt or something like that. You know what I mean? I don't think it would be too bad. But I do love my merino.
I do too. I'm with you 100%. Merino underwear, merino socks. That's, and there's no doubt that that's what I'm wearing.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't even know how to do this next question. Here, we'll go back to here. I'm going to say, let's go spotting scopes. And I know this opens up a lot for interpretation, but I'm going to throw, I want to talk about optics in two categories, spotting scopes and binoculars. So let's start with spotting scopes first.
So I think that one, and I'm going to split that one up too, because I have to say it depends on the hunt.
Yeah.
If you're going elk hunting, don't even put it in your truck to take it out west.
Yeah.
You just don't need it. Elk are massive, and a good pair of 10x42 binoculars is all you're going to need. Not even. I care for elk. I have a pair of 8x42s that I carry. They're lightweight and they're easy to carry. If you're going mule deer hunting, or I like to coos deer hunt in Arizona, that's when that spotting scope becomes almost a necessity to have in your pack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. And a lot of it depends on the style hunt. Like, and for me in South Dakota, I liked being able to use a spotting scope to pick apart the landscape. Now, there's guys out there who would say that a spotting scope is probably underrated, because they're going after specific game, right? They're going after big bucks. They want to be able to see the antlers, judge the antlers, judge the age class. I'm not there yet for, let's just say, a mule deer hunt. So I want to do is see one, go make a stock on it. Like I'm not in that pickiness stage yet. So I think for me, where I'm at right now, if you are looking for particular animals, yes, a spotting scope is very important. But if you are not, and you're kind of just a general hunter with a general goals, whether that's a buck or filling the freezer, I don't think a spotting scope is near as important. So I'm going to say, a spotting scope is probably just accurately rated, right? It's a good thing to have. It's an extra thing to have. But that carries over into my next thing, where I would say a good pair of binoculars are definitely underrated.
Yes, I agree with you. And I will agree with you on the spotting scopes too. I would say accurately rated. So on that, I have a couple in my closet, and they're there if I need them, and they're there for particular hunts. But the binoculars, 100% underrated.
Yeah.
I never go any, I have binoculars all over the place. I've got a pair in my truck. I have a pair in my office at home. So I can see the mountains from my office at work. And I keep a set of binoculars in my office at work just for playing around.
Yeah.
And then of course I always have a set on my chest. So I have binos everywhere.
Yeah. So when it comes to binoculars, I've been on a couple Colorado elk hunts where it's literally pointless to almost even have binoculars up there. I mean, they're good to have just in case, but the environment that we were in was just dark timber, lots of deadfall. You're not seeing anything, right? Even if you hear mm-hmm. something at 50 to 60 yards, you may not even ever see it. So I would say in a scenario like that, their binoculars are accurately rated. But mm-hmm. when it comes to a Western or like a mule deer hunt, wide open country, any type of hunt where you have the ability to glass, and if you don't have the capacity to carry a spotting scope or a good pair of binoculars, man, once you have a good pair of binoculars and you use them in a scenario like that, you don't ever want to go back to take a step back in your optics, because you right. are able to really, like, it's not as detailed as a spotting scope, but you still have the ability to pick apart the land looking for, you know, bedded animals in the shade or in the coulees or whatever it is that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure. I hear this question, it's been asked to me and it gets asked all over the place. I need a pair of binos and I need a spotting scope. What do you recommend? And I always say, don't buy the spotting scope. If you don't have either, combine all of your money, get a good tripod and a good pair of binoculars, and it's going to be more fruitful than having both.
Yeah.
A cheaper spotting scope, cheaper binos, and a cheap tripod. I would save my money and get the good tripod and a good pair of binos.
Yeah. And I think that's
even for that open country stuff, even if you're hunting out in Arizona, a good pair of binoculars and a tripod is going to get you a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, I think like if you were thinking about buying both, and you're saying, well, I need both. I don't think you need both. I would do what mm-hmm. you said, you know, set out, maybe save for another year or two, get the spotting scope later, but just get a bigger magnification on your binos. Like just get a bigger, you know, pull that money together. You don't need to just get a bigger, a mag on your binos.
Yeah. And then get pair of 12s or 10s.
Yeah.
You know, I used to, this Scott Hamlin, he runs a bow shop in San Antonio, Texas. They go out and elk hunt every year, and that guy would never even carry binos on an elk hunt. All he ever had was a rangefinder clipped to his belt, because just like you said, sometimes you get into timber, you're not looking at vast land, you're not looking far, you're in the middle of timber, and all you really need to do is see where shooting lanes and to have ranges on those shooting lanes. And a rangefinder is 7 power. So if you really needed to look a few hundred yards, you can do it with the rangefinder and see a bull.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was an interesting way to do it. Saves the weight. He doesn't carry the weight on his chest. He doesn't have all of that extra stuff with binos. Just keeps that little rangefinder clipped to his belt.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about another optics, and I'm just going to let you talk about this, cause I have no experience in rifle scopes, whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, for a shotgun or a muzzle loader or a rifle, I have no experience. So let's just say, a rifle scope.
Uh-huh. Rifle scope is one of those things you want to get the best that you can afford. You know, if you're looking at buying a really high-end rifle, say you're going to buy a new Proof Research rifle, and then you don't have any money left over because you spent your whole whatever surplus on the rifle, and then you're like, well, I'm going to go buy this $150 scope. You're not doing that rifle any justice, and because you're really lacking in the quality that you're going to get.
Yeah.
You're better off, instead of buying a $5,000 rifle, you're better off to buy a $1,000 rifle and a couple of $1,000 scope. And people really underrate the rifle scope a lot, because they are just the same as binoculars. In a low light scenario, which happens early morning, Maybe you see that buck of your dreams and it's just before, you know, it's coming up just after shooting light. And it's still really dark. A good rifle scope is going to let in more light. It's going to be brighter. It's going to be more clear. And same thing goes for the end of the day too, when it's getting into dusk. And the better the scope, the better the quality, the more opportunity you're going to have.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think the old saying is, I think it's spend as much on a scope as you did on the rifle, just for comparison, or maybe it's twice as much on the scope as you do the rifle.
Yeah.
That only goes so far, you know, if you spend $5,000 on a rifle, you're probably not going to spend $10,000 on a scope, but, it really does play in there. You do need to get good quality optics. And there's more that goes along with it too. And that's the tracking and like the adjustability of the turrets and how accurate those adjustments are. So the better the quality of the scope, the better the tolerances, tighter the tolerances are going to be when it comes to all of those real finite little adjustments.
Yeah.
So I think they're underrated to a point. If you're looking at a shotgun and you're going to put a scope on something that you're only going to shoot 50 yards at turkeys or less, you probably don't even need the scope. I have a red dot on my turkey gun.
Yeah.
And it works perfect. It's great for that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an application type of thing.
Okay. All right. Let's jump into a completely different kind of category here. And let's say, let me look. I have in my office, I have just a pile of shit that is all hunting gear and equipment that's not put away. And let's go with, let's go with sleeping bags.
Underrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think 100% there's some research that needs to be done on sleeping bags too. You know, just to go out and buy one, if you're going to hunt in Washington State or Oregon, to go buy something that's down filled and super lightweight, it's probably a mistake, because when that down gets wet, you don't have a sleeping bag anymore. You have a big old waterlogged sleeping bag. That's what you get. You can't really sleep in it. So you might get something that's synthetic and treated and, you know, it's water resistant, it's like super water resistant. But if you're down here in New Mexico where I'm at, I haven't seen rain in months, you know. I don't worry about my sleeping bag getting wet, so I can use down and it's very light and super warm.
Yeah. So I've had,
it's one of those things. I say it's underrated because I don't want to be caught. I don't want a 30-degree sleeping bag and then get caught in one of those weird storms where it drops down to 0 degrees and I'm not prepared for that temperature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is, you don't know how important a sleeping bag is on a backcountry hunt until you need one. And
until you know how important it is.
Exactly. So, I've been to on a couple hunts where the overnight I got, I think mine right now is a 20. It goes down to 20 and, or 25 or something like that. It's right in that range. But, for the most part, I would go in there. I would wear maybe just my base layers and I'd be very comfortable in that sleeping bag. But then, I went on a couple South Dakota hunts, and some of the nights it got down into the high teens, low 20s. And it really makes for an uncomfortable night, which if you have these uncomfortable nights, multiple nights in a row, when you're not getting the sleep that you need and you're just cold and you're shivering and you got to adjust and you got to warm yourself up a little bit and then you fall back asleep and then you wake up and you're cold and you do that for multiple nights in a row, it really drains your energy level throughout a 3 or 4 day period, and it can suck and it can snowball and add up, and then it gets to the point where you're just like, oh man, I don't want to have to hike over that next ridge. But
Even hunt altogether.
Yeah,
I'm going home. I'm cold.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah.
So I've only had one real experience with a wet sleeping bag. I had a hole in my tent. I was able to get it out and dry it out. But I'm going to say, you know, of all the things that are non-hunt related, right? And what I mean by that is the bow, the arrows, you know, the I'm going to throw boots in, you know, boots and clothing into the hunt side of things. Everything on side of the non-hunting side of a backcountry hunt is I would put sleeping bag as one of the most important products you could buy. And if I'm going to spend my money on something, because I'm about ready to, if I'm going to spend my money on extra money somewhere or put a lot of money into it, I feel like a 0 degree bag is where I'm going to be heading. And it just has all my bases covered. If I get too hot, I just unzip it a little bit. If I get if I get too cold, I can really bundle up tight in a 0 degree bag and, just kind of, I don't know, shoot from the hip on making myself comfortable. And so I definitely think a sleeping bag is, very underrated.
Underrated and almost essential. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's essential gear. Yeah. And I would go as far as to say, to add on to that and say your whole sleep system is probably underrated.
Yeah.
Your tent, especially if you're doing the backcountry, sleeping under the stars, under the trees, out on the mountain, if you're doing that, that sleep system becomes it's almost one of the top things that you have to have. If you're sleeping next to your truck, whatever, you can figure that out. If it rains, you crawl under the truck or, there's other things you can do. But when you're in the elements, that's it. That's all you got.
Let me just ask you, this is going to get to the question. How old are you, Chad?
44 years old.
44. Okay. So you're 44. Yeah. I'm 40. I'll tell you this, that the sleep system, as far as the pad is concerned, when I was young, right, I probably could have just slept on the bare ground and been fine. Right.
Oh, but, yeah, definitely.
But when I'm older, I got I'm just broken basically from head to toe.
Hips start hurting, knees start hurting. Everything hurts when you don't get a good night's sleep.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's when I upgraded from a foam, a rolling foam. It wasn't very thick pad. And I went and I invested a little money into an air pad now. And I sleep a lot better on it. I have less problems with my hips and back in the mornings from that. And I don't know, the pad, I think it's accurately rated for a pad, but I will say that I feel the more you spend, the better experience you'll have.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And, so with sleeping pads, there's a couple things you got to look for. And this goes with what you said about spending money. You really want to look for a good R value, and R value is call it the warmth, right? I'm not going to go technical because I just don't know the technical definition of R value, but it's the ability for that thing to resist the heat or the cold that's coming off of the ground. So if you're going out in September into Southern Colorado and it's going to be 70 during the day and 50 at night, you don't really need a super high quality pad except for something that's comfortable. If you're going in Colorado in October and it's going to be 20 degrees at nighttime, you need a good R value pad because otherwise you'll freeze. You just get so cold, and a pad that has a higher R value resists that cold and it keeps you warmer. And it also, so if you have a 30 degree sleeping bag and a zero R value, you're not getting anywhere with that 30 degree sleeping bag. You're still going to freeze.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, let's go to the pack. The pack.
Yep.
Okay. So go ahead and kick it off.
I think packs are very important. I think they're cultish also, like we talked about with the camo. So a lot of guys want packs are, they're almost like boots where they fit. Body frames are not the same. Nobody has the same body frame. And the packs are set up different too. So don't just go buy a pack. I think they're underrated. But I'm trying to say, try some on, right? Do the research and try them on because some of them don't fit right. I've tried several different brands, and most of them work for me, and I can fit them up and I can make them work. There's a couple of the very top tier name brands that I tried on. I wanted to be, I wanted to have that cool pack, and they fit me terrible. And I was so 30 pounds in those packs, and I couldn't hardly breathe. They were just not, I tried fitting them in every configuration I possibly could. And they were super uncomfortable for me. So they're underrated because of what they have to do when they have to carry a 100-pound load and, you know, all of your gear for 4 or 5 days or whatever it is. But I think it's important to say you really need to make sure that you get the pack that's right for you and not the one that's right for Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah, agree 100%. Man, I tell you what, I have had I've had a shitty pack on, and I've carried over 100 pounds in that shitty pack for 3.5 miles. So it was 2 years ago. We packed out a mule deer, and you know, with all the gear and equipment and the meat, we only wanted to make it one trip. It was brutal. I'm not gonna lie, but I walked away from it saying, okay, it wasn't as bad. Could it have been better in a more expensive pack? Yes, it could have been. But I will say that as far as the experience, yeah, it slid on me a little bit, and I had to keep adjusting and tightening and the balance, you know, I had trekking poles, and, you know, so that was able to help me out, you know, as far as the balance and stuff was concerned. But I'm going to say that a pack, man, I definitely don't think they're underrated, right? I don't think they're underrated. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, like, don't get me wrong, you shouldn't go to Walmart and buy a backpack for a 5-day backcountry hunt, right? They don't have what you need there. But I feel like you can get away with a tier or two down from the big dogs in the industry. And I
think that's true, especially if you're going one time out of every 4 or 5 years.
Right.
If you're going out for some kind of hunt.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people will do that. They'll plan this big trip and this big hunt, and it's once. It's their once in a lifetime or whatever, and they go all out, and you don't really need to do that.
Yeah.
You can get away, like you said, drop down a tier or two, and it might suck. It might suck for 3.5 miles, but if you're only going to do it once in your life,
yeah.
Guess what? It's going to suck even with a top tier pack. It's going to suck really bad.
Yeah.
It still hurts and it's still heavy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I'm going to put a pack on, and I almost like everything I want to also say will contradict myself, but I'm going to put a pack right on the line between overrated and accurately rated. Like if the wind blows one way or the other, it could fall to either side. So that's where I'm going to put it.
Yeah. I would change my answer too. And I think I would say it's at least accurately rated.
Yeah.
Because I think most people will tell you when you talk to almost anyone in the Western hunting industry, a pack is one of those things that you just needed at least a decent one.
Yeah.
So I would say it's accurately rated. And yeah, I'm with you on that one.
And the good thing about some of these products that we're talking about, specifically packs, right? They have if you take care of them, they have a very long lifespan, right? You should be able to get away. If you buy one pack, and I'm just going to throw a number of $300 out, $400 out, that's going to get you a good pack. And that pack is going to last you a very long time if you treat it right. So, you know, boots, I feel like wear a little bit harder, you know, and I think a boot, like I'm definitely in the need for last year. I cleaned them up real good. I sprayed water repellent on them, you know, gave them a makeover basically. And they did really well, but I'm starting to get some cracks in the seal between, but that's my fourth or fifth year wearing these boots. And so I got away with a lot on those boots, and I wear them whitetail hunting too. So, you're a bow hunter, right? You bow hunt too.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So yep. I want to go to mechanical broadheads. Okay. What do you have to say about mechanical broadheads?
I think that's one of those depends on the game too. Like hunting coos deer, I don't care. I'll shoot mechanical broadhead any day. Mule deer, same thing. Elk, I would probably go with a fixed blade broadhead on elk. And people will argue with me because I know guys that hunt elk with mechanical broadheads, but I think that they would probably argue with me until they hit a shoulder blade or something.
Yeah.
And then at that point it might, you know, change. I think for elk, I think they're probably, I think they're overrated. For just about any other game out there though, I think they're average rated.
Yeah. So here's what I'll say about that. I know that there's fixed blade broadheads, and I've killed deer with fixed blade broadheads. So I'm going to say, knowing that there's a backup of and a different option to choose from, and when I whitetail hunt, I use fixed blades, sometimes I use mechanicals, but I will say this. I feel that mechanical broadheads are overrated. And I will say this because I feel that it has moving parts on it. It may not happen all the time, but there are times when moving parts fail and there's no moving parts on a fixed blade broadhead. So you just take out that, you take out that ability to have failure. If you're using, it's all on shot placement at that point, right?
Yeah. Yep.
In the same breath or out of the other corner of my mouth, I'm saying, but I do love what a mechanical broadhead does as far as damage on an animal when it hits the right spot and performs like it's supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. And they fly better, you know, there's less wind resistance. There's some pros and cons to them.
Yeah.
I think if I would have been shooting a mechanical broadhead at my deer that I shot last year in Arizona, I probably wouldn't have lost that deer. I think I had a lot of wind drift on the arrow. I still made a bad shot, so it doesn't really matter. But I think it can go either way. And that's why I said they're average. I wouldn't use one on an elk, though.
Yeah. So here's what I'll follow up by saying this. I feel they're overrated, and that if all of a sudden a being came down, some alien came down from the sky, and he took all of the mechanical broadheads off the planet, I wouldn't worry one bit. I would just shoot.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I would shoot fixed blades.
Yeah.
So
I also think if we're talking broadheads, man, I might get crucified for this one, but whatever. I think a lot of these $100 for three broadheads, I think those are overrated too. Yeah. These guys that are promoting these, you know, these broadheads that are easy to sharpen and they're super sharp and they're just, you know, I just think those are overrated. Like I shot a javelina last year three times with the same broadhead and every time was just blowing right through that thing. Yeah. And it was a three pack that cost me $40.
Yeah.
And it just kept on doing its job. It was just fine. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know what year it was. It was like the early 2010s. And I shot three does that year. I shot three does that year. And I did it all with the same arrow and broadhead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of them were at, you know, that was from a whitetail in a tree stand, which I probably wouldn't do that. I wouldn't shoot another arrow at a mule deer at 60 yards or 50 yards, right? Or an elk at that distance. Mm-hmm. But at 20 yards, this, like, the ability to fail at that short distance, there was no reason for me not to. And I killed all three of them, and all three of them went in my freezer, and all three of them went into my stomach. So,
went into my belly.
Yeah. Yep. So here's something I don't know anything about. And if you're going to compare, okay, what kind of gun do you shoot? Rifle do you shoot?
Oh, wow. Take your pick. I got a whole,
what's your favorite,
safe full of them.
What's your favorite rifle to go elk hunting with?
I've only rifled elk hunting once and I carried a 300 Win Mag.
Okay. 300 Win Mag.
Now I have a 7mm Remington Magnum and it'll be used for antelope this year.
Okay.
So,
what about the ammo in that? Like, mm-hmm. what is the specific style or specific brands of ammo? Do they perform different? So basically what I'm getting at is obviously if you have a rifle, that rifle takes a certain cartridge, but, if brand X makes that cartridge or brand Y makes that cartridge or brand Z makes that cartridge. It's all the same cartridge, just made by somebody else. Is that ammo underrated or overrated?
I think that's a tough one. I might even just say accurately rated, because ammo is one of those things where if I have two, let's say I've got two rifles, exactly the same model, everything about them is identical. They're even the serial numbers are off by one, right? They were made the same day, same time, same person. Those two rifles can shoot bullets complete the same bullet. I could buy a box of ammo from Cabela's or Sports, wherever you get ammo, and I could shoot five rounds of the same ammo through those two exact same rifles. One rifle might put a half inch group at 100 yards and the other one does a 2-inch group at 100 yards. So when it comes to ammo, I'm going to say you can't just buy a rifle and buy some ammo and go out and hunt with it. You need to put a little time in behind that rifle to make sure it's zeroed and it's shooting, you know, it's shooting accurately and zeroed properly and all of that. Now, with all of that being said, if you were just going to shoot an animal at 100 yards, yeah, it doesn't matter one bit what you shoot. It's all going to be good enough at 100. But I think a lot of people nowadays are capable of shooting 300, 400, and 500 yards. Rifles are certainly capable of that. And at that point, you really do need to dial that rifle in with I won't say the right bullet, but I'll say the right bullet for that rifle. So if you have a Nosler Accubond and a Hornady ELDX and a Sierra Game King, right? Three different brand type of bullets. And the Accubond shoots the best, shoot the Accubond. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Shoot the one that's going to, it's just like arrows on a bow. You're not just going to go buy some arrows off the shelf that are pre-cut and pre-fletched. And those are the ones you're going to hunt with. They may not shoot very good in your bow, you know?
Yeah. I don't know why this popped up, but this isn't really a overrated, underrated. This is more of a preference question. Do you carry in your pack while you're out hiking around, do you have a Nalgene bottle or like a thermos that you carry your water in, or do you use a bladder?
I use both.
Okay.
I carry both. I use a bladder mostly for hydration purposes, but my bladder, the way I have it hooked up is I have an inline filter on the hose, so that I can put clean water or dirty water, whatever kind of water, into that bladder, and I can suck that water through the hose. Yeah. And then it's clean, right? Because it's filtered along the way. And then I carry a Nalgene bottle, or sometimes I'll just throw a bottle of whatever water, store-bought, gas station, you know, Smart Water or Ozark or whatever it is, in my pack. And I use that for coffee and cooking. I don't really use it for hydration, but I always keep something extra that I can make coffee and cook a meal with or something. So gotcha. I use both.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to wind this down, and this is, we talk a lot about gear and the importance of it, but I feel like this is just as important. The food that you bring into the field with you, we can say whether it's from the truck or, and I'll let you go down both scenarios, from the truck or whether you have to pack it in on a backcountry hunt, food that you bring with you.
If I'm hunting from the truck, I've got a 2-burner Coleman stove and a table, and like I'll make bacon. I do. If I'm truck camping and living out of my truck, I'm living large. I'm cooking hamburgers at night and all of that kind of stuff. If I'm backpacking, I carry, I'll even go brand specific on this because it's literally all I buy anymore. And it's a brand called Pinnacle Foods. They make their meals are phenomenal and they taste good. They don't bother my stomach. So some of the other brands that are out there kind of give me some issues with my stomach. And I just find that those backcountry meal rehydratable meals are, that's what I carry if I'm going to go in for the 2 or 3 days, is those lightweight dehydrated meals.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So,
but you got to try them out. I think they're a good meal, I think, is underrated.
Yeah.
Most of the meals are overrated, if that makes any sense. But when you find the one that works for you and it, your stomach digests it well and you don't have any problems with it, it's pretty good. And I would say to test them out before you just go running up the side of the mountain with a Mountain House Chili Mac. Because I promise you, you're going to have some issues heading up the mountain. At least I do. I don't do Chili Mac on anything.
Yeah.
But, so try them out ahead of time.
Okay.
I just got a box in the mail the other day that had 10 meals in it from that Pinnacle company, and they're all awesome. Those won't be the meals I hunt with. Those will be meals that I take when I'm hiking and training and, you know, just getting ready for the season. I'll eat those things just to train with.
Yeah. What's that brand name? Pinnacle Foods?
Pinnacle Foods Company. Yeah. So the guy that runs it is actually a chef, and he creates these meals that are just, they're awesome. He's got a jalapeno cheddar biscuit and gravy meal that's for, I eat it for breakfast usually, or lunch or dinner. It doesn't matter. I'll eat it. They're super high in calories too, which is really helpful if you're really burning up. You know, you're doing 7 or 8 miles a day. Yeah. They're nice.
I just pulled up their website, and that is the first meal that they have, the jalapeno cheddar biscuits and herb sausage gravy.
Good. That one is awesome, man. I'm telling you.
I'll have to check.
And then the Thai chicken, the Thai curry one is really, really good too. And I don't really like curry, but that one's really good.
Yeah. So give me some more reasons, like why it's underrated, why a good meal is underrated.
Like I was saying, you kind of got to watch your stomach, and then some of them will just almost be empty calories when it comes to, when you've been going hard all day and you try to eat a meal that's like 200 calories, it's not really going to do anything for you.
Yeah.
You have to supplement it even more. So you got this meal that you're rehydrating, you're trying to eat that thing, and then you get done and you're still hungry. So then you're eating a candy bar on top of that and some gels or some peanut butter. So, you know, you're consuming a whole bunch of stuff to try to get the same content, calorie content, carbs, and all of that stuff that you would get from a good quality meal.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're going to get more energy. Basically, you're going to get more energy out of a good quality meal than you would something that's less quality.
Yeah. I agree 100%. And I'll go on a different level. I also feel that food is underrated, and maybe not for day one of a five day, let's just say backcountry hunt, because I'll tell you what, man, when I first started backcountry hunting, I felt like I don't want to cook a big meal at the end of the night, 'cause I'll be too tired. I'll eat three Clif Bars or something like that, right? I'll just eat a whole bunch of Clif Bars.
Oh, man, yeah.
And long story short, it just, from a psychological standpoint, knowing that you're going back to cold, like, Clif Bar is just depressing as shit. And you're tired.
But think if you're going back to jalapeno cheddar herb biscuit and gravy.
Exactly.
It's exciting after 3 days of getting hammered on the mountain.
Yeah. So I even take it a step further now. So we're like, I'll throw in one Clif Bar per day just for, you know, oh shit, I need some calories, time to eat, you know, just knock it out real quick. So lately I've been doing a lot of, making my own trail mix. Like, I'll go get some peanuts and some almonds and some cashews and all these things, and put them in a, you know, sort them out, mix them up, and put them in a portion size things, and take them into the timber with me, some jerky. And then it is not efficient when it comes to packing them in, but I will bring or try to bring or save enough space in my pack for one apple a day. Because fresh fruit, it's almost like, boom, when you eat it, it's just, I don't know, it's energizing. It is, looking.
That sounds really good now. Putting myself in your scenario, I'm like, oh man, I bet that tastes good.
Yeah, or just like, oh man, okay. Making the second or third move on the day to a glassing point, you know, I know that when I'm going to get there, I'm going to set up my spotting scope, and I'm going to eat an apple. And it's almost like the, you know, you get to a point where it, you're so exhausted by the end of the day that the only thing you are thinking about is eating, right? It's like, oh man, I'm going to go home and I'm going to crush that Heather's Choice bison chili, which is one of my favorite meals that I've had out there. And then Peak Refuel, that's, they do a lot of hunting brand. I would say that they're like a hunting brand focused type thing. They also do some backpacking and stuff like that. But they have a Spanish rice that is ridiculously good. And I'll eat. But like I said, going back to that is it's because after a while, you and I, we've both been there. It gets difficult and the mental focus needs to be there. And when you can go home and you're not only your body can enjoy the calories, but your mind can say, this is delicious. That's, that is huge for the, if you want to call it self-awareness or, self-esteem or whatever it is. Right. I think that's a big, that's a big thing. So I'm going to say good food, and it doesn't have to be expensive, but good food is definitely underrated.
Yeah, I'm that way with this. I take a Snickers bar for almost every day.
Yeah.
Or a Whatchamacallit or a, just a, some kind of good candy bar. And that's kind of my, probably like your Clif bar, but it's, I look forward to it. It's almost like, oh man, it's Snickers time, you know? Yeah. Like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yep.
And that's one thing. If people think I'm crazy, I love Spam. And I will take a Spam single. You can buy a little single slice of Spam at the grocery store. I take a Spam single for every day that I'm out.
And you fry it
up?
And
I love it. Yeah, so, sometimes I will, especially if I have ramen or something like that. Yeah. I'll mix that Spam in with the ramen. Sometimes I just eat that Spam cold and raw and just ready to go.
Yeah.
So, and or a bagel, if you can get like a thin bagel slice, put it on that. And there's some carbs there with the bagel. You know, you get extra little carb boost. And
yeah,
I take food that I like. I don't take food like my first year. I did that whole thing where I watched these guys on the Instagram or YouTube and they're packing these bags. And the whole time I was watching them pack, get their food ready, I kept thinking, that doesn't look like, I get why you're taking that, but if I don't, that doesn't look good to me. It's kind of like you with your Clif bars.
Yeah.
And after about 2 days of eating what other people ate, I realized really quickly, absolutely, this isn't going to work for me.
Absolutely.
I keep Starburst in my pocket and I'll eat a Starburst every now and then. Like I said, I take Spam. I take all kinds of stuff, and it's stuff that I if I'm sitting there at 9 o'clock and I look in my food bag and I think, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound good. And ultimately I'm like, well, I guess I'll have a cup of coffee. That's the only thing I really want right now.
Yeah.
But if I look at my food bag and I'm like, oh man, I got a Snickers, I got a Spam, I've got a Peak Refuel and a Pinnacle, and you're excited about everything in there. That's what gets me through the day.
So. I wanted to talk just a second before we shut her down about coffee, because man, I have made when I go on these mule deer hunts, I will take my morning coffee with me, right? So I will bring some water. I'll bring my jet boil. I will, you know, go to my glassing point and I'll set up. And as the sun's coming up, you know, it's still too early to look through the spotter, I'll, you know, start making my coffee. And that is another mental thing for me. It is. It's one of those things where if it's cool out and you're a little cold and chilly, throw down a cup of coffee, and man, I'm telling you, it can be very satisfying and gratifying.
It sure can. I agree with you. Now, I'm not a coffee snob. Like I don't need this fancy $2 or $3 pack. I go to the grocery store and get the Folgers instant packs that are like $1 for $5.
Yeah.
You know, but if I need that coffee for an energy boost, a lot of times I'll drink it cold, right? I'll put it in a water bottle and shake it up and I'll just drink it cold for what it is.
That's tough.
trust me, in my army days, I had some coffee that was many days old and cold, and it was not the best, but it did the trick.
It had the caffeine you needed.
It had the caffeine I needed. But if I'm like, I'm sitting there and I'm about to glass and it's nice and cool outside, and I think, man, I tell you what, that's when I'll bring out that jet boil and which is an underrated product, by the way, and we can talk about it if you want. But I'll get that thing out and I'll heat up that nice warm cup of water. So maybe I got a pack of oatmeal or something there to go with it. And it's just, there's something satisfying about a warm cup of coffee and little snack.
Yeah. Do you have the jet boil with the push button start on it?
I don't. No. No. I have, mine is, it's an older model. I think it's called the Zip, maybe. No push button start, because I think that was always break. Everybody,
oh,
I
yeah.
know that.
Mine's broken.
Start, it doesn't work. It doesn't yeah. work. See there, I'll add you to the list. But mine has like a little loop on the neoprene wrap that goes around the cup. There's a little loop there, and it's perfect to stick a lighter down in it. So I keep a little lighter that's always right there with the jet boil. And I don't care where I'm going. My jet boiler or MSR or whatever stove you have, I think, you know, just a little cooking stove with a cup, it's in my pack no matter where I go or what I do.
Yeah.
I always have that thing. And I have the jet boil. And then I also do, I have a little tiny one that's called an MSR pocket rocket or something.
I got the exact same one.
Yeah. And that one's really nice too. And it packs down a little bit smaller and it's a little lighter. I think the jet boil works faster a little bit, but either way, I have a stove of some sort with me all the time, no matter where I go.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, man, appreciate your time today. I think this was a great BS session, and we'll have to get on again. Anything else that we need to cover before we hang her up today?
I think, trekking poles, underrated. And I'll leave it at that. I think everybody should have at least one trekking pole in their pack.
Yeah.
At least one. I keep one all the time. Yeah.
Except
and
for
that,
me.
It helps a lot.
Yeah. Except for me. So when I was packing out that mule deer, shit ton of weight on the back, necessary, definitely underrated. But just like, I don't know. I think they're accurately rated because I on my second trip out there in December, and I was doing more hunting from the truck, but I forgot them. And so I was hiking around doing the same stuff that I was without this, you know, without my poles. And I guess I had to focus a little bit more on where I was stepping and how I was stepping. Like if I have trekking poles, I'm a little bit more aggressive with my foot placement and, you know, going up or
definitely.
Down a hill. But I don't know. I didn't miss them too terribly much. Now, if I shot a deer, I probably wish I would have had them. But I suck at hunting.
Or river crossings, creek crossings, things like that. When they're just nice to have those extra points of contact. And my wife and I do a lot of hiking out here in New Mexico. And I gave her a set, and she started using them. And now she won't go anywhere in the mountains without them. She just loves having them and cruising with them. So, I always have mine with me. I don't use them all the time unless it's really nasty. If I'm going up a real steep hill or going down a really steep hill, usually it's just hiking for me at that point. But I'll get them out every now and then, and I'm pretty glad that I have one when I do get them out.
Yeah, if I have them with me, I use them all the time, all day. They're with me every. I got bad knees, dude. I got bad hips. I got bad back. I'm broken. So anything to help me out. Is great. I love, you know, I love having trekking poles.
Yeah.
So,
let me throw a couple just real quick. You're probably trying to shut it down, but I think a Garmin InReach is a good device, good thing to have. It doesn't have to be a Garmin, some sort of communication device. I have an InReach and I have when it's hunting season time, I put the unlimited message package on there. It's like $60 or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just really nice to be able to text wife and friends and just, you know, if you're all alone somewhere and you don't have cell phone signal, you can still have company, right? You can still have people there that you're willing to talk to. So I like having that. And I was thinking there was backup batteries, like a charge pack, a battery pack is I don't know what if you're just going out for an afternoon or a day, you don't really need them. But if it's 3 or 4 days, your phone's going to go dead. Yeah. Your Garmin's going to go dead. All of that stuff is going dead. Cameras, if you got it. So
yeah,
kind of nice to have, but not essential. just nice to have.
Absolutely. What was the first one that you said? The Garmin. Oh,
the, yeah. Oh, the InReach.
Yeah. So, there are places where I don't have any cell phone service on, definitely in Colorado and, in certain parts of South Dakota where I was at. But, obviously I don't even know how to say this, like the digital maps, like Hunt Stand or any other digital mapping, it's almost like it's almost so easy to find it. You can use it on airplane, those things on airplane mode, and it doesn't really drain a ton of your battery. So it's almost a no-brainer to have that. I mean, I guess it's underrated from that aspect, but it's almost like not even a conversation anymore. Everybody has it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. Of some sort yeah. of mapping software.
Yeah, some sort of mapping software.
Yeah, definitely. I've had them for the last. So coming up in the Army, I used paper maps. That was in my early years. I was a combat guy who ran around the woods in Europe, and that's what we used, was paper maps. And I wouldn't even look at a paper map anymore. I used to sit my first couple of years, I guess, I had paper maps in my bag and I never took them out. Now I won't even mess with them. I just use map software on my phone.
Right. Right.
So that's all I do. Yeah.
And that ties in with the battery pack. Like I bring a battery pack with me that has some other additional functionality. It's great to have, but like, I don't know. There's a part of me that says they're overrated from the standpoint of like, the reason I'm going out and doing a backcountry hunt is because I want to get away from a lot of this stuff. So what I've found myself doing at night is, you know, I'm laying down in my tent and I'm playing some dumb block game instead of, you know, maybe just trying to sleep. Yeah, Angry Birds or something, you know, something like that, instead of, you know, maybe trying to sleep or just relax and doing all that other stuff. So I don't know. Accurately rated, I guess, for the battery packs
I think so. Yeah.
So, and there you go. That's it. That's all the time we have today. Chad, again, thank you very much for your time, and we'll talk to all you guys later. Yeah.